Al's on the line to talk to Mr. Eisenhower. Welcome to the program, sir. How may we help you this morning? Al?
Yes, good morning.
Yes, sir.
Sorry. I have a jacaranda tree that's been in the ground about 4 years. It's never bloomed. It's about 15 feet high. I fertilize it a couple times a year, and I just don't know what to do with it. Should I cut it back maybe halfway, or is there something else I need to do?
No, you're not doing anything wrong. I would encourage you to continue to fertilize it on a regular basis. Jacarandas and several other types of trees, flowering trees, just don't bloom every year, and it could have to do with your planting location. They do have to have ideal growing conditions. So anything you can do to amend the soil, improve the growing conditions, the rooting environment, it will help the tree have a better chance of producing a bloom. As we say, as go the roots, so go the shoots. And if you're not getting good shoot development and good bloom, be looking down. Be thinking about the rooting system, the environment. Do all you can to improve that, those cultural conditions, and hopefully you'll get a bloom in the next few years. It's not unusual for some blooming trees not to set a bloom until they are well established, sometimes 4 or 5, even 10 years into their life, because they have to have a very well-developed root system in the surrounding soil, and that sometimes takes many years to accomplish. You have to realize that a bloom, especially a jacaranda bloom, which is a huge flower, is a large energy drain upon the tree. And just from a survival standpoint, trees know when they can produce that bloom safely and give partition the energy reserves toward that activity. And if they don't have the stored energy reserves to be able to support that bloom, they simply won't bloom.
We appreciate the call, Alan. Some great information. As you're talking about the tree being able to support the new
bloom,
you can help by reducing the amount of blooms the tree has to provide by pruning. You were going into a conversation about a class you just gave on pruning.
Yeah, we just taught a class yesterday, and we had a We had lots of questions coming in regarding citrus pruning and what's the right timing for pruning citrus, and how does it affect the bloom, and how does it affect the fruit production? This is a great time to be pruning citrus. You were kind of at the end of the period. We don't want to do heavy pruning on citrus much beyond the 1st of April. But between February 15th and April 1st is a great time to be pruning citrus trees, including because you want to give them a chance to recover from the pruning enough to be able to put on some foliage to protect themselves from the intense heat that we know is just around the corner. People ask us, well, how does this affect the fruit development? Well, if the citrus trees are blooming right now, so it's not a great time to be pruning your citrus and knocking off all that bloom, which is really the fruit for next season. Next winter is dependent upon all those blooms you have on the trees now. So right when they're blooming, probably good to just leave them alone. If you've waited too long, preferably we like to prune before they set bloom. That's why we say start pruning after the 15th of February. But by the middle of March, as where we are now, if they've started to bloom, probably not a good time to be trimming. Wait until after they've set the fruit. You'll see the little BB-sized fruit that sets on each one of those blossoms. And once that fruit has set, that BB-sized fruit, you can go ahead and start doing your pruning. Of course, you're going to be cutting off some bloom, cutting off some of the fruit but you'll be able to see it at least and know, branches you might want to retain if they have a large number of fruit on them. Fertilizer. I was asked a question regarding which type of fertilizer to use. There's a myriad of types of fertilizer. There are specific fertilizers that are specific to citrus. You could get some of those brand products wherever you purchase your fertilizer. Look specifically for citrus fertilizer, but even any good tree and shrub fertilizer will be good this time of year. I like to use an ammonium sulfate from time to time too, because it does contain sulfur, which helps to buffer the pH in our soils and gives a little bit better uptake of of nutrients that might be chemically tied up in the soil due to our high pH. So if you're putting down some, usually a good Arizona fertilizer will contain some sulfur in some sort of form, because it'll help to, as I said, temporarily buffer the pH and give you a better uptake of nutrients.
Receiving a lot of calls, not holding on to talk live on air, but Steve had called in and wanted to know, on his citrus tree, they have a well around it.
Mm-hmm.
And right now it's just bare, and his neighbor's been telling him, you got to mulch that, you got to mulch that, you got to mulch that. And he wants to know, is there a value to putting mulch there on a well-established tree?
Absolutely. If you can put mulch down around any of your trees in your yards, it's tough to do that in lawn settings, of course. But then the lawn is providing a mulch of sorts. It's an insulation layer between the intense heat and the actual soil level, soil layer. If you can put down some composted mulch of some sort, some organic material, some wood chips down around the base of your trees, it's wonderful for moisture retention. It encourages some nitrogen cycling, and it provides an environment for beneficial organisms to get active in the soil. The microbial activity in the soil is improved by adding some organic matter. As that layer of mulch breaks down over time, it really helps the soil tilth as well. The water percolation rate will be improved, and just a lot of really good benefits to your trees. We sometimes say it's even better than just kind of artificially stimulating a tree with fertilization. Composting is a long-term investment in the overall health of your trees if you can get that layer of mulch down there. It's mimicking what we see in nature, because as trees are dumping leaves, you know, continually over many, many years, they build up a layer of mulch beneath them, which is a wonderful environment, as I said, for all those benefits. And if you can kind of recreate that by putting a layer of mulch around your trees, it's really great. That being said, be careful not to put it right up against the trunk of the tree, and providing a place where the water can be wicked up against the trunk of the tree. That creates an environment that's conducive to fungal pathogens that can attack the cambium of the trunk. So keep the mulch several inches away from the base of the tree, so that stays nice and dry. And you'll be and of course you don't want a 6 or 8 inch layer of mulch. Go for maybe 1 to 2 to 3 inches of mulch. It depends again on the texture. If it's a coarse textured mulch, you can make it deeper. If it's a fine textured mulch, be really careful that you're not capping the oxygen from the root system. Sometimes people think a little more of a good thing's better, and they'll dump 6 inches of a very fine textured mulch around their trees and end up killing them with kindness, because they've capped the oxygen and the soil can't breathe. So just be careful. Put mulch down, but just make sure it's a reasonable layer, maybe 1 to 3 inches.
George called in this morning, wanted to know what kind of tree can he plant that'll provide shade that won't uproot pavers?
A small one.
Right.
That's the short answer, and it's a good answer. It depends on the distance he is from from the pavers. If you can find a tree that at maturity will not have a trunk diameter larger than 5 to 6 inches, that will likely be a pretty safe tree to plant, within 5 or 10 feet of a paved surface. And there's a lot of those, small to medium-sized trees. Many of the ones I mentioned this morning, some of those flowering trees would be a great suggestion for some of those areas. By the way, I stand corrected. That Tabebuia can be quite a bit larger than that 15 to 20 feet. The one I saw was about 15 feet, and I assumed it was, like the crepe myrtle, was going to be a relatively small tree. But they can be a little bit larger, so you need a little bit more room than what I had indicated. But, if you're going to be planting next to a hardscape element that you need protected from root encroachment, go with a smaller tree. You have to do that. Otherwise, you're going to have roots lifting those pavers and causing unnecessary headaches.
And that's one great reason to go with pavers over concrete, because fixing a concrete slab that's heaved from roots is you demo it out.
Dig it out, completely replace it.
with pavers, you don't have to demo it. I mean, you've got to take the pavers and unstack them, but you can unstack them, scrape the dirt out, and put it back down. And sometimes if you need root removal, a lot of mature trees can survive a little root damage.
Yeah, really good point. And the paved surface also is permeable, so you know water is getting down between the cracks in the pavers, and it's good for the trees, of course, and it encourages root activity underneath those pavers. But we have done a few change outs where we've taken the pavers up, removed the offending roots, and then relayed the pavers, and everything's back to normal. So yeah, convenience of a paver system for that reason, you know, in and around trees. And sometimes even the pavers will, you know, buckle and maybe lift here or there, but at least you haven't, it's not a big crack, you know, radiating out across a flat concrete surface for 30 feet. You know, maybe people don't mind a little undulation in the surface of their patio. In fact, a lot of our customers just live with that because they enjoy the trees. And even though the roots have lifted those pavers a little bit, it's not a real serious trip hazard, and they just enjoy the trees and just a little bit of some abnormalities in the surface texture, you know, of the top of their paver system. So,
now we had given sisu trees a pretty bad name. Yeah. They are very troublesome in a certain situations, but it's still a pretty tree, and in the right situation, in the right setting.
They've got a really bad rap, and we've beat up on them pretty badly over the last couple of years on this radio show and everywhere else we talk about them because we have firsthand knowledge of how difficult they can be to manage. But they are a really awesome tree. There's, you know, everything's got its, flip side. And the flip side of all the damaging root encroachment that we have with sisus, they are a pretty beautiful tree, and in the right setting, they do really well. I have a sisu I put in, 15 years ago, before I knew that they were a problem, and it's just I don't water it very often. And it just sits there. It's doing fine. It struggled for the first several years, and it's finally gotten up to where it's providing some shade, in a spot in our yard, and I like it. I'm aware of the problems. I'm not going to take it down just because there's a potential for it to be causing some issues down the road. I would rather live with that potential problem and enjoy the shade that this tree provides. But just being well aware that, you know, they are, there's a potential problem.